Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ACTUS podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and ACTUS. I'm Jess Flegel, the editor for ACTUS, and I'll be your host for today's show. We have a great show lined up, and I'm going to be joined by several members of the ACTUS team shortly, including ACTUS Director Rebecca Hendren, Associate Editorial Director Linnea Archibald, and Editorial Manager Carla Kosak. Today's show will also feature an interview about communication silos and quality reviews with our guest, Priscilla Marler, MHA CSSB CPHQ, a quality improvement engineer at University of Iowa Healthcare. She and her colleague, John W. Cromwell, wrote an article published in ACTUS's January-February edition of the CDI Journal, titled A New Model for Collaboration, Surgeons, CDI, Coding, and Quality, and we'll be discussing the article and its findings. Also, a quick reminder that the ACTUS podcast offers 0.5 ACTUS CEUs for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used toward your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. We'll share the instructions at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. Thanks again for joining us, Priscilla. I am so excited to have you here with me today. And about this article, one thing I wanted to ask first off, you mentioned in it that you had a multidisciplinary team at your organization that recently began reviewing PSI events. So I wondered if you could tell me more about what considerations were made to assemble the team, what roles were those for those who volunteered or were selected, and just generally the outline of its purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, Jess. And I'm excited to be here to share with ACTUS podcast today about University of Iowa Healthcare's PSI Patient Safety Indicator Review Team and how we function. So to give you adequate context about how did we go about assembling the team, I need to take back to August of 2022. This was really a launching point of our organization making patient safety indicators an executive level in initiative. A lot of learning happened in that first year as we work to understand different workflows and gain greater perspective about the PSI review process. So my role with UI Healthcare is as a quality improvement engineer. I'm the lead quality improvement engineer for the quality improvement program at UIHC. And so the quality improvement program really was sponsoring these initiatives related to patient safety indicators. So we needed to connect with CDI, and we needed to connect with coding, we needed to connect with documenting physicians, and we learned how siloed each of our departments were related to PSI reviews. And until these initiatives were launched, the Quality Improvement Program had not historically collaborated extensively with CDI and HIM, so we had a lot to learn about each other. So as we were doing this during this time when we're getting the initiatives up and going, we focused primarily on understanding what each individual process is. What's the process of a CDI quality reviewer in an HIM quality coding auditor versus a physician advisor versus how we look at things from the quality improvement perspective? We identified lots of opportunities for improvement, opening channels of communication, and creating more transparent and inclusive discussion about PSI cases as we work to build trust between our teams. So we went through several iterations that we trialed of different communication processes to promote a multidisciplinary approach to PSI reviews. And we decided to try a weekly PSI review team meeting starting in July of 2024. Our hypothesis at the time was that if we gathered together in real time, CDI, HIM, quality, physicians, we could conduct more robust reviews, increase our ability to learn from one another, and discuss opportunities for improvement as a team, and then we would overall improve PSI performance. I already mentioned some of the roles that were selected as part of the team. Again, we wanted to make sure that all stakeholder voices were included in the review process. So everyone who touches an aspect of what goes into a patient safety indicator review. Our team was, from the beginning and still is, comprised of those CDI reviewers and their leadership to support them, CDI physician advisors, HIM quality coding auditors, and their leadership. And then Dr. John Cromwell and I represent the quality improvement program along with one of my fellow quality improvement engineers. The purpose of this team at a high level is to create a structured, multidisciplinary forum for real-time learning, collaboration, and performance improvement related to patient safety indicators. More specifically, our team was really designed around five core aims. So number one, we wanted to conduct high fidelity, multidisciplinary PSI case reviews. So by bringing in CDI, coding, physician advisors, quality improvement, bringing us all together in real time, we ensure that PSI is reviewed through both the clinical and the technical lens from the documentation and the coding perspective. This allows us to more accurately assess documentation, coding validity, clinical nuance, and quality of care considerations, which then strengthens the integrity of our reviews and the conclusions. Number two, promote shared learning and cross-functional understanding. One of our early insights was that each discipline as part of PSI reviews had very deep expertise in their areas, but limited visibility into the workflows and the constraints of others. The review team creates a space for bi-directional learning. So CDI might learn more about quality methodology and measurement logic. My team with quality might I've learned so much about coding and documentation nuance, and our physicians who are part of this as reviewers help ground discussions and create that clinical nuanced perspective. This has significantly helped to strengthen trust between our teams, the efficiency of our reviews, and then the overall outcomes. We've had a really great time, you know, getting to learn from each other, getting to know each other. We've gotten pretty tight as a group. Through the PSI review process, part of our goal is to also identify actionable improvement opportunities. So this is a team that's focused on continuous improvement. It's not like we just set up a process and said, let's just see what happens, let it go. We're always looking for opportunities to learn from a new case. It's not just about simply validating or invalidating the PSI cases. We want to learn more about the culture of communication through documentation. So we're looking for patterns, system vulnerabilities, documentation gaps, etc. Through the PSI review process, we've also been able to strengthen escalation pathways and organizational alignment. So the team works, functions as a central hub that allows concerns, trends, system level issues related to coding and documentation to be escalated efficiently to executive sponsors, our executive leaders, et cetera. So this ensures that the PSI work remains aligned with broader patient safety, quality, and reliability strategies. And then finally, we're really focused on how can we create sustainable performance improvement, really baking the PSI review process as a multidisciplinary team into the culture of how we go about PSIs. So really, ultimately, the team exists to support that sustainable improvement, not just short-term metric gains. So we embed the learning, our collaboration, and the accountability into standardized review structures. And we've been able to move beyond just reactive case review into more proactive systems improvement for long-term PSI performance stability, not just on the documentation and coding side of things, but also in the things that we're able to identify through review for clinical care opportunities for improvement.
Wow. Sounds pretty extensive. You guys have your work cut out for you. But that's super exciting how much you've been able to dive in so far. And I would agree that, yeah, there's nothing really beats just that real-time collaboration. So that's really cool.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's not like it just magically manifested itself. It was a labor of love. You know, when quality improvement program, imagine an outside entity. So for anyone who's in a CDI department or is a physician out there in the front lines of clinical care, or HIM coding, to have someone say, hey, we're going to involve you in this initiative now. And we're as a quality improvement engineer, one of our folks is going to come in and kind of poke and prod in around on your processes for the sake of understanding. Trust was really, really important that we established that we have a collective goal here, and let's start creating that higher level understanding of how each of our workflows impact each other upstream or downstream, and how can we more efficiently integrate our collective expertise for the purpose of PSI review.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. Just to jump into a different section that you wrote in that article, you guys talked about how when you were reviewing a PSI 15 case, the team found the word injury meant something completely different to surgeons, to CDI encoding, and to quality. And that was just a fascinating part of the article, by the way. I really enjoyed how you broke that down. But I wondered if you can share another example, like another word that might translate differently across disciplines, and like how that can affect a PSI case from what you guys have found.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a couple examples. So
great.
A common one that I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with is that pesky word post-op. Providers often use this word to indicate time period reference. So something occurred in the post-op time frame. However, that word means something entirely different from the CDI encoding perspective and how that translates into ICD-10s. And so if not clarified, this can lead to false positive PSIs, for example, PSI 11, which is post-operative respiratory failure. So that's one example that's very common of what is different interpretation from the clinical perspective versus how it translates on the CDI encoding side of things. Another word that we've given considerable attention to within our PSI review team is coagulopathy. So we identified as a team early on that our providers tended to only document this diagnosis for patients taking prescription blood thinners. Coagulopathy queries were being sent with several disagreed responses coming back for coagulopathy, strong clinical indicators indicating maybe there was a transfusion response or a dilution or something related to anticoagulation during the patient encounter. However, once we started collaborating closely with physicians to close that interpretation gap, we improved documentation consistency, which had a direct impact on our PSI 9 performance. So once physicians, we were able to connect with them and they understood, oh, okay, yep, here, you know, coagulopathy can have it's a broad definition. So it's both the inability to clot or we're clotting too much. So the disagreed queries we were getting responses to were related to the patient's not on blood thinners, but there might be something else going on. I remember a major breakthrough moment for physicians in a particular clinical service we were working closely with. They had high counts of PSI 9s. And we approached them about documentation of coagulopathy. And we learned from this team of surgeons that many of their patients have coagulation dysregulation due to active malignancies, for example, but they just weren't documenting it. So by explaining that, hey, you know, we're not just looking for you to capture coagulopathy if your patient's on, you know, warfarin or Eliquis or other blood thinners, if your patient has something that's impacting their coagulopathic status, and you believe it correlates to a coagulopathy diagnosis, please document it.
Awesome. Thank you for that breakdown. I don't think I've heard of that one. So, of course, you know, I'm sure listeners probably have, but that is very, very helpful. Next question I wanted to ask you on this article, you guys wrote about how one of the most common and preventable sources of PSI misclassification is the misinterpretation of clinical reasoning, which, you know, you've sort of gone over here already, but I wondered what type of education would you recommend that can help CDI professionals and just CDI programs in general, like learn to recognize this disconnect?
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. From my perspective, one of the best things you can do is talk to your documenting providers. So while our team has certainly learned a lot from each other, CDI learns from HIM, HIM learns from quality, and likewise, we learn from ACTIS podcasts, from coding clinic guidance. The biggest learning moments occurred when our team directly engaged individuals documenting in the chart. This is specifically just absolute gold if you are talking about operative notes. So, in the way that surgeons document what's going on in the case and what was done, if you've got a question about something, just ask, just connect with that individual. And I don't mean within the boundaries of the queries. CDI teams and quality teams can be reaching out and connecting with documenting individuals to clarify, hey, you've got it documented in this way. What were you meaning by this? Explain to us what was going on at this moment, because we're reviewing the medical record, right? We're not there in the procedure, seeing what was going on with the surgeon and what we were doing and the decisions that were made. But we don't, not everything can be captured in the documentation related to the narrative of the case. So when there's a curiosity, there's a question that comes up with teams, connect with the other side of it, connect with those clinical teams and ask questions. You'll learn a lot, I promise.
Great advice. Thank you. Next up, I in the article, I loved the section where you guys had like the step-by-step guide of like a collaborative framework you created. And one of the last steps was create dictionaries for each specialty. So like the surgeon meeting versus the coding meeting versus quality meeting. So I wondered if you could share more about like how your team either like has created this resource or is currently creating it, and any tips you have for others to do the same.
Yeah, that's a great question. So this has been something that I've been working on in this fiscal year for our organization
Ooh, exciting.
with the team, which is there's such robust conversation when it comes to our multidisciplinary team review of these PSI cases. And often the same questions would come up related to language in the documentation. The article that I wrote for ACTIS related to the word injury was one such thing. We were seeing this often, and injury translates differently from how the surgeon is meaning it, the intent of the documentation, versus how that translates in coding. So I thought, we're asking a lot of the same questions. We should probably start taken some of these things down so that we can refer back to them. So what we do is what I do for our team is when there have been trends of things that have been consistently coming up, things related to injury for PSI 15 or coagulopathy that I spoke about earlier, or if there's descriptive language in the chart, such as the word inadvertently came up in a case review recently related to a surgery. Well, what did they mean by inadvertently? Was it an accident? We altered the course of the procedure. It was a decision that we made. Clarification. So just starting to collate all of these patterns and trends based on language in the documentation that we've been discussing as a team, and reaching out to our documenting providers, and they're sharing with us their perspective so that we can refer back to this and don't always have to feel like, okay, I know we talked about this in the past. I remember a case, kind of. Instead, it'll be something that we can refer back to over time. And then when there is the opportunity to say, hey, we believe that there is a physician education opportunity here, utilizing that data that we're collecting to then create tip sheets, education, when we're periodically meeting with physician teams about coding and documentation.
Right. Yeah, that's super smart, I gotta say, because when you only have the information, it just sort of dies with you. Like unless somebody writes it down, it's just, it
Yes.
leaves
You
with you
only
at will.
have, right, exactly. You only have what's in front of you.
Right. Yeah.
And so,
Which CDI teaches in
it's,
general, right? It's just like it's not
yeah,
written down, it's
right,
gone. So
exactly.
it's
If it's
just
not
another piece of
documented,
that.
it didn't exist.
Exactly.
So,
Yeah.
but we know As long as medical records, electronic medical records have been around, and then before that, we know that not everything is written down. So
Yep.
when there's an opportunity to ask a question and learn from others, I encourage folks to always take advantage of that when it presents itself.
Nothing like a good spreadsheet, right? I'm partial to them. But that's so great. Thank you for sharing more about that. Another thing you talked about, and maybe you've covered it a little bit already, but you stated in the article, like, understanding is a collaborative process, and that is, case in point with everything you've describing with this team you've worked with. But I wondered what, new understanding have you been able to achieve? Like, what outcomes have you seen, and like, what are you looking forward to in the future to accomplish with this team and these goals?
I think that one of the greatest achievements that our PSI review team at UI Healthcare has been able to achieve is really us just coming to the table with a sense of genuine curiosity. Curiosity about how is this interpreted in the coding language, or is there confusion or vagueness or discrepancy, room for interpretation in coding clinics? Not being afraid to ask questions. It seems like eons ago, but when we first all started working with each other, everyone was speaking from this position of what their very specific expertise scope was. And so we were kind of all talking at each other and sharing what our perspectives were. But once we all started to focus on being curious about each other's workflows and what are the imp if we if something is documented in a specific way, what are the implications and how that translates in the coding pathway? So not being afraid to one, ask questions, be curious, present new information. We value a safe space where all voices are heard, included, and welcomed as part of our PSI review process, but we're not afraid to challenge each other either. The goal has been to come to consensus as a group. Not one stakeholder voice has unilateral decisional ability. It's a group collective, and we've just be continued to become stronger, more scrupulous in how we're looking at these cases, and more collaborative in terms of how we're learning and then being able to disseminate that understanding beyond our immediate PSI review groups to our organizations, physician DEO teams, medical directors, etc. It's just only continued to grow and become better since July of 2024.
That's so cool. And best of luck to you guys moving forward then. It sounds like you're already doing a lot of great things, but yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Priscilla. And this, like I said, it's been super helpful, everything you've shared in our conversation. Unfortunately, we have run out of time for our discussion today, but luckily there is more to read on this topic in your article that was recently published in the CDI Journal, which is a benefit of ACTIS membership. So we invite any listener to go check it out, and to enjoy the full beauty of this topic in your guys' article. As always, if our audience has any questions, you can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. Now it's time for the ACTIS Update, a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. And as I mentioned during the intro to today's episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by my colleagues, Rebecca, Carla, and Linnea, to dive into our first team update of 2026. And I know you wanted to talk about the community survey that's open right now, Rebecca. So I'll pass the torch over to you first.
Thank you so much, Jess. Yes, I'm thrilled to talk about the community survey that we have out and that I'm really asking everybody who is an ACTIS member or a part of the ACTIS audience and the ACTIS community, whether you listen just to the podcast, you read CDI strategies, you come to the conference, anything like that, you are part of the ACTIS wider community. And so we want you to take the community survey. We do have this open until March 6, and the link will be in the show notes. This is your opportunity to give us feedback. what is it that you need your community to provide for you? Because as we always say, ACTIS is the association of clinical documentation integrity specialists, and everything we do is to make your lives easier. So this is a fantastic opportunity. Tell us what you need, what's working for you, what are you using that we put out, and how. There's a lot of questions, but you can breeze through it pretty quickly. A lot of it is multiple choice, so it won't take you too long. And we do have a couple of rewards if you get picked. So we will be raffling off a couple of ACTIS memberships. So a couple of lucky people will win those. So once again, I just really encourage everybody to take that survey before it closes March 6th, because we do pour through every detail you provide and it influences what we're going to do for the next year. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Carla, who has another deadline to talk about.
Yes, we love our deadlines here at ACTIS. So I want to formally invite you to meet us in Chicago this April, the 20th to the 23rd, for the ACTIS conference. We're going to be located just steps from Chicago's famous Riverwalk, and will be a short walk from the theater district, as well as sites like Millennium Park and Navy Pier. So we're really going to be in the heart of the city this year. And our early bird deadline for special savings does end in less than a week. So on February 16th, that'll be the last day to claim your early bird savings, which is an additional $100 off your conference registration. So if you're thinking about joining us in Chicago and you haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, please do consider doing it this week while you can still save that extra $100. And to sweeten the pot a little bit more, if you're an ACTIS member, on top of early bird savings, we'll give you another $100 off. So it really is a great time to be thinking about making the decision of whether you're going to come to the conference this year. And since you're thinking about that and planning ahead, a few other conference-related reminders. We do have a hotel room block at the hotel where the event's being held, with discounted rooms specifically for ACTIS conference members. So we do want to invite you, if you're attending the ACTIS conference, to book your hotel within that room block before it closes on March 27th. We've heard that it is a really solid rate compared to other hotels in the area at the time. So we want to encourage you to take advantage of that discount. I also want to encourage you to take a look at the agenda and start thinking about which breakout sessions you might want to attend and which of our networking opportunities look most appealing to you. If you're thinking about becoming an ACTIS member, we have a special session about what ACTIS membership can offer you, and it will allow you the opportunity to meet other people that are considering ACTIS membership. If you're thinking about getting credentialed with our CCDS or CCDSO, we have a special session about that with tips and tricks, and again, another opportunity to meet other people that might be pursuing credentials as well. So there really are tons of different opportunities for you to connect with people with different backgrounds, different interests, maybe from your geographical region. There's just so much that the ACTIS conference has to offer you. So again, before that early bird deadline ends in less than a week, seriously think about getting registered if you plan to join us. You can use all of the links in today's show notes to access that information and registration details. And now I'm going to pass it over to Linnea to talk about another benefit of ACTIS membership.
Yes. So first of all, I just want to encourage everybody to come to the conference as well, because I was not there last year as I was out on maternity leave. So I'm really super excited to see everyone. So I want all my friends to come hang out at the conference this year.
So we're so excited. We missed you so much last year. So we're glad you're going to be with us this year.
It's not the same. I am very excited to see everyone. So I hope everybody listening goes ahead and registers by that early bird deadline so that we can all have an ACTIS party this spring. But entirely unrelated to the conference, in case anyone missed it, the 2025 CDI salary report is available now. That is an ACTIS member benefit. The data in that report really helps us within ACTIS get a broader picture of the industry, but it can also be a big help to you as you are on your own professional development journey. It's a great place to go if you're, hoping to advocate for a raise or a promotion for either yourself or your staff, off, but you can also use it to look up the data specific to your skill level, your background. You can use the average salary ranges that correspond with similar roles, years of experience, geographical region. All of that information is in this report, and including that data in your proposal to your leadership team, whether that's advocating for a pay raise or for a promotion, can make a really big difference as you form your argument. The survey also includes data related to staffing trends, remote work, non-salary benefits, the impact of AI tools on staffing, and more. So no matter what your goals are for this year, the report holds a lot of valuable information as you build that case. It includes 10 pages of analysis and 59 charts of data, which I know feels very overwhelming. So my recommendation would be to go ahead and read the analysis part, that 10 pages, and then just refer to the charts that you are interested in digging into a little bit more closely, depending on your specific goals, your needs, or your interests. And if you're interested in learning even more about the salary survey, I do want to remind ACTUS members that our first quarterly member call of 2026 will be tomorrow, Thursday, February 12th, from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern. And it will feature an overview of the survey findings from yours truly. There will also be a panel discussion with our members of our ACTUS advisory board about ethics in querying, which is the subject of an upcoming paper that they've been working on as well. So very exciting stuff at that quarterly call tomorrow. And I do hope that you will check out the salary survey report in full and find ways to really leverage the data for your future projects and your professional and personal growth. And that's always our goal at ACTUS, and we hope this helps you. And with that, I think those are my long-winded updates. So I will pass it back to Jess.
Thanks, Lynette. I would agree. The core member call is never something to miss, but this one will be especially great. That's all the time we have today. So as always, you can find the links for more information about all of this in today's show notes. As a reminder, before we close out, each ACTUS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTUS.org by clicking on the ACTUS podcast link under the Free Resources tab, and then clicking on today's episode from the list on that page. Then scroll down to the recording of today's episode and click play. At the end of the video, like all the way at the end when the timer gets to zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Simply click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting the brief evaluation. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there too. To ensure your certificate reaches you and does not get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode CEU is Sunday, February 15th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. With that, we've reached the end of today's ACTUS podcast episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, February 25th, with a new episode hosted by ACTUS Director Rebecca Hendren. If you would like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show anytime on the ACTUS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by Deanne Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jezar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please email us at info@actus.org. Until next time, take care, everyone.